Hello, welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast with Paul Sullentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Thank you for listening. Today we have Michael Bryan, who has one of the more interesting career arcs, story arcs that I've been around at Wichita State. He is Wichita State's record holder in the weight throw and the hammer throw. Michael was a second team NCAA All-American in both of those events, the weight throw in 2022, the hammer throw in 2021. Currently, he ranks sixth nationally in the hammer with a distance of 70.33 meters. After winning the John McDonnell Invitational last week in Fayetteville, Arkansas, Michael is a senior from Wamego. He spent 2 years at Hutchinson Community College before transferring to Wichita State. So, Michael, let's start with the spring semester at Wamego High. You're figuring out, what do I want to do? Football is an option, but you don't really want to play football. Tell us how you ended up getting into the throws and or continuing your throws career and going to Hutchinson Community College.
Yeah, so I wasn't actually recruited anywhere to do track and field. I was only recruited to one school to do football, and it was one of those NAIA, like really small schools that just costs a lot. It's one of those private schools. So I knew a guy, Eli Miller. He also went to Wamego High, and he was a senior when I was a junior, and so he was already at Hutchinson by the time I was almost graduating. And he was on the track program, and he knew the head coach, Pat Becker, at Hutch. And I asked him if I could get his number or if he could give Pat my number and just exchange calls. And so I think 2 weeks later, he gave me a call, and he wanted to know my numbers. He wanted to know a little bit about me. And I could tell he wasn't very surprised by the numbers I was giving him. And I just told him I knew I wasn't that impressive just comparing myself to all the other athletes going into college. I told him I don't really care if I get paid or if you pay me a little bit. I just want to do track more. I want to extend this time that I have to compete. And so, I mean, fast forward a couple months later, I'm on the track team and I'm practicing, and this throws coach, his name is Skylar Arneson. He was a WSU athlete. He threw the hammer. He was the second of the top 10 for the hammer throw. Now he's the third. And he coached me kind of like how Dorf coaches me right now. Like, there's a lot of similarities just because he was coached under Dorf.
But when you say Dorf, John Hetzendorf, the throws coach at Wichita State.
Yeah, sorry. I get too used to that.
No, that's...
yeah. But yeah, he was all like, Skylar Arneson was also a Hutch athlete. And so I guess he just came back out of the niceties to be kind of like help out with coaching at Hutch. But once he introduced me to the hammer throw, he didn't tell me to do any drills before. He just gave me a hammer. He said, I want you to throw this hammer. I don't want you to try to do anything. I don't want you to drill anything. I just want you to throw it and see how you feel. And so there's a video out there. I don't know how they got a hold of it, Wichita State, but they show it every now and then in the team room when we have team meetings. And it's the most ugly throw in the world. I'm winding two times and I take two throws and it just looks awful. It's very awkward.
And that's your first attempt at the hammer? Or?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I have it on my phone somewhere, but before that, someone else posted it when I didn't even have it. So it was pretty funny. But yeah, once I started throwing the hammer, discus and shot put, that kind of just filtered out. I just wasn't interested in it anymore. And then it started becoming this weird obsession, growing and growing and growing every year. So 2 years into the Hutch, it was more like a technical battle than a distance battle, because I hit, I think at the start of the season for hammer at Hutchinson my freshman year, I think it was like 36 meters or 35 meters. And then at the end of that first year, I hit 49 or 48, somewhere around there. But that second year is kind of where I got stuck. I started off with 48, ended off with 51. So not that big of a gap compared to the first year. But I really wanted a really big jump so I could, you know, get more offers from other schools, because you don't want to stay at a JUCO for more than 1 to 2 years. Like, if you hit a third year, then you're just wasting that eligibility you could have for a bigger university. And I knew Wichita State was right next to Hutch, and it was in Kansas, so tuition would be nice. And I wasn't being recruited at the end of my sophomore year at Hutch by anybody. So again, I had to go through that same process, except I didn't know anybody that was going to any colleges. I just had to look up on the website and ask coaches, and the first college that I was interested in was Wichita State. And so I went on their website, found the head coach's email, found the throws coach's email. I emailed both of them. I, did the normal, hey, this is my name, this is what I throw, I'd love to talk to you some more about possibly being an athlete on your team. And I think it was, again, like 1 to 2 weeks later, Dorf gave me a call. He wanted to talk to me about the same things that Pat Becker at Hutch wanted to talk about. And I told him my distances. I told him kind of how I trained or how I feel about training. And again, he wasn't very, impressed. So again, it wasn't a matter of being paid to me. It was just a matter of continuing to do this under support. So like I told Dorf, this is one of my favorite things I like to remember, is I told Dorf, I don't really need the money. I could be a walk-on if you like, but I just want the opportunity to throw for you guys. And he seemed like pretty okay with that. He was like, yeah, we'll get you a visit. We'll talk to you and we'll meet with the head coach and everything. And
At this point, your distances were not anything spectacular.
Not for a JUCO athlete, right. No. So fast forward a couple months later, I'm on the team, as of my knowledge. This is a funny story. The head coach told me last year at the end of the year, so they kept this a secret from me, so I actually didn't know. But I got kicked off the team before I even was on the team. So they put me on the roster, and they wanted to kick me off immediately because they were running out of roster spots. And I was one of the guys that they needed to kick off because everybody else, like, they had a really good team that year. So they couldn't afford that many roster spots. And so I don't know what happened. Maybe Dorf convinced Bolt to keep me on or something, but I kind of see it as fate. Like, thank you for keeping me on that team. Because, that 1 year of improvement from starting at 51 meters and ending at 59 meters, that's a huge jump for a redshirt year. But Dorf can attest to this, but I annoyed the crap out of him trying to ask him so many questions about Hammer, how to train Hammer and everything. And after that first year, after that first redshirt year, this conversation with with Dorf, the throws coach, it's still stuck in my brain. But after everybody was done competing and we were going off to summer, I remember my last training session, I walk up to Dorf and I ask him, what do I need to do to be a 70-meter hammer thrower? And it's something that I always remember, but he just laughs at me. He, like, not in a, there's no way you can be a 70-meter hammer thrower laugh, but it's more of a, are you being serious or are you trying to pull my leg or something? And I think after that little bit of silence for me, like not reacting, I think he started to realize that I was being serious, and he told me, well, Mike, you kind of need to make Hammer your life. And like, that made complete sense to me. And so that summer I made Hammer my life. And so I just trained through summer and started the next year, trained through all of that. And once I got more serious, Dorf started giving me more journals to look at, more authors, more throwers to look at, and just giving me all the history behind it. And then, like, once he introduced that to me, I kind of took it and I just ran with it. I just kept researching, kept looking at other throwers. I started calling other people. I started reaching out to all these USA guys, these professional guys, asking them, like, how do they throw hammer? What do they think about it? And kind of like pooling all their knowledge and seeing what would work for best for me. And it's just, I'm just always improving and always trying to mentally train myself to be like a better hammer thrower. And that's kind of the situation I'm in now. It never ends. I'm just always trying to find out new ways to be better.
John described that conversation to me, and he was clear he wasn't scoffing at you, laughing. His takeaway from that conversation was he was kind of laughing because he realized at that point you were on your path to really getting, you know, deep into this. He thought that was the conversation he pointed to where he said, all right, this person is really serious about it. That was kind of his recollection of it. Would you agree? Was that kind of an important step on your journey to really diving deep into the hammer?
Yes, huge step.
So the people that you reached out to, did you get good advice from somebody? Was there a prominent hammer thrower who was really helpful?
There's a lot of guys. So, some of the ones I like, you don't reach out to just because, I mean, this was in the 1980s, but there's a coach called Anatoly Bondarchuk. I believe he was Russian, but he's the one who coached Yuri Sadik, Sergey Litvinov, all those guys that, like, world record holders, 86 meters, 84 meters, those guys that are out there, like, going crazy. But he recorded all their data. And he has papers posted, and he's got like 30 years of data just gathered up for hammer throw. And he's kind of the guy to look at for statistical analysis of how to train hammer. But some of the guys that I reach out to, like, let's say Tyler Williams, Sean Donnelly, Vlad Pavlenko, he's probably my favorite person to reach out to because he trained under Sergey Litvinov Sr., who was trained under Bondarchuk. That same guy, and it's just crazy to hear the things they would talk about and how they would train and how it's more of training the mind than it is the body, because if you focus too much, you're not exactly throwing the hammer. It's think less, do more type of thinking.
So I think if you watch a hammer thrower, you see how that could be a lot of fun. You kind of get to throw this heavy thing out there, and maybe you can imagine I'm throwing it at a dragon, or there's just something really entertaining about the hammer throw. From your perspective, what is it? What is it about that event that just grabbed you to this degree?
Well, turning in a circle, that's definitely the most interesting thing. I've never... You don't really imagine doing four turns in a circle, just it seems like you would get really dizzy if you keep doing it over and over again. And that's exactly what happened when I first started throwing, is I got really dizzy. I realize now that one of the guys that I came in with at Hutch, his name is Nick French, he got so dizzy one time he actually puked on the side of the ring because he just... you couldn't handle the vertigo that was going on in his head. But you definitely have to adapt to that. But just seeing that hammer go far is such a fun thing to watch. Same, I think some javelin throwers will say the same thing. It's just the long throws, it's just fun to see that thing go.
So there was one of the days when classes were canceled at Wichita State because it was just snow, miserable. And I'm here in the morning, and there's somebody out in the throwing area, and it's you, it's Michael Bryan, throwing in the snow and the wet and the cold and everything. Why not just take a day off and say I'm gonna stay in bed or I'm gonna stay inside? Why do you need to be out there throwing in those kind of conditions?
I have my days off that I schedule, and if I don't have an off day scheduled, I have to throw. And doesn't matter if it's raining, if it's, you know, if it's snowing, if it's super hot out, that's kind of the time to throw. And I don't see it as, man, it's wet, or man, it's hot, or man, it's freezing outside, or there's ice on the ground. It's man, what a great opportunity to train in bad weather, just in case we have a meet in bad weather. Because, like, at Arkansas, it was bad weather, and everybody did bad, and I got a PR. But that, just throwing in bad weather, you kind of have to do it if you want to get better. But it doesn't bother me too much. I'm kind of the guy that, you know, if it's snowy, shovel it. If it's rainy, sweep it out. If it's hot, bring some water.
Water's important. So John Hetzendorf described your throwing career as one big research project. You've mentioned the scientific aspects of it already. Why does that part of throwing the hammer appeal to you?
Hammer's big on physics. So it's a lot about radius, tangential velocity, acceleration of a ball, tension, force through tension, and how gravity works, the angle of release, orbit, and everything. If you walk up to the bullpen up where the track's coach's offices are, and there's like four whiteboards, two on one side and two on the other, I believe. If you look on one side, you'll see a whole bunch of drawings of angles. You'll see a whole bunch of circles with a triangle drawn in them, and it all means something to me because I'm going up there and I'm grabbing a dry erase marker and I'm just kind of experimenting by going through all these numbers and forces and seeing how it would affect the certain throw. And the more I experiment with it, the more I start to understand what it is. And if I have something I'm confused about, especially when it comes to the physics of throw, like if I'm thinking about maybe I need more radius or maybe I need more speed, I'll go up there and I'll experiment. What happens when you give it more radius? What happens if we give it more speed? What's the reaction on the body and what's the reaction on the ball, and what's optimal for it to go as fast as possible, as far as possible, and what's optimal to give the ball the most tension through the wire? It's all physics to me.
Describe your jar of pennies philosophy.
Yeah, that's kind of a recent one. I think I've shared with a couple people, but it's not something nobody really asked me about. But just imagine a small jar, and you have all these pennies in it. So you start out the day by dumping this jar out, and you have all these pennies on your bed, on your table, anywhere. And you have an empty jar right next to it. And you start off your day with, let's say, you wake up and you make your bed, brush your teeth, take a shower, organize your clothes, put them on, do everything, do your morning routine. That costs pennies. That costs time and energy. So you take those pennies and you dump it in the jar, right? And I'm just using my example for my day. So I'm done getting ready, and I'm driving to the track, and I'm getting ready to practice. And my practice usually occurs in 2 days. So I'll throw in the morning, go eat, throw again in the afternoon, and then lift afterwards. Usually that takes about 5 to 6 hours to do overall. So that's 5 to 6 hours out of midday that I'm committing to just throwing the hammer and lifting weights and resting in between. So I take a larger handful of pennies and I dump it into that jar. And by the time I'm done with that, the jar is almost halfway. It's halfway to, I'd say, a little bit above halfway full. So now I only have so many pennies left to put in my jar. What am I going to use for those pennies? Now, like, I guess I can use it to go out and party or, you know, do the other wasteful activities that would not help a student athlete. So I choose to maybe focus on homework. So I take a small amount of pennies, dump that in there, and now I have less pennies. And so I work. So I work at a liquor store because they pay really well and they're really flexible with student athletes. So there goes another penny or another couple of pennies. And by the time, let's say, like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock comes around, I have enough pennies for a good amount of sleep and some mental recovery, or, you know, some small amount of time or hobby that I can do. For me, it's very hard to kind of have that free time to just relax because I'm spending so much time with hammer that, you know, I've already dedicated so much time that all those pennies are going in the jar. And so the concept of this jar of pennies is like a day-to-day process. So you want to fill the jar to be the most productive you can be to whatever you're doing. So let's say my jar is full and I still need to do something else. That means I didn't plan my day well enough because I have run out of time and energy to do that. So that means I need to sacrifice some other activity to complete other tasks. But you can't take loans on this jar, because if you take loans, that means that you're sacrificing your mental health and you're sacrificing your emotional energy, and it all just gets taken away. And that's kind of how I would explain my jar of pennies.
So you have a finite number of pennies and you can use them to eat right, train, throw the hammer, or you can use them to watch Yellowstone or reruns of Friends. But if you do that, then you have fewer pennies for rest time or homework or those kind of things. It's resource allocation, I guess.
Yeah, I understand that. Like being a Division I student athlete, I'm glad I caught this early on. But you only have so much time to be a student athlete. If you think about it, like in your whole lifetime, what's like 4 to 6 years out of the possibly 100 years of your lifetime you're going to live, and that's not a lot of time. And so if you spend your time fooling around or wasting it, then how are you going to see that by the time you're 40 or 50 or 60? Like, you want to make, I just really want to make sure I'm using my time wisely, so I feel proud of the time I used, and that's really all it is.
Hi, this is Rick Miuma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So it sounds like you're planning to dominate Masters hammer throwing at age 80. Is that the long game here?
Heck yeah. I don't know about that one.
Okay, if I was a coach listening to this and I would say, I like a lot of what I'm hearing, how can I get my hurdler or my pole vaulter to approach their event in the same serious manner that Michael does, what would your advice to a coach be?
That one's really difficult, because I watch the coaches at WSU, and I see their motivation for their athletes to get better, and you see them try really hard. And coaches all over the country, they try really hard, and they make schedules for their athletes, and they tell their athletes to do this, or they tell their athletes when to train. And I think it's a little mix of both. Yeah, you want to give your athletes as much resources as possible, but it's the athlete's responsibility to take advantage of those resources. So I like to think that it's not the coach that makes the program, it's the athlete that makes the program. And if the athletes aren't invested, then you're missing a huge piece to success. So it's as much as the athlete's responsibility as the coach's responsibility to build success. Like if I was a coach, the only thing you can really do is just make sure you give your athletes the most amount of resources you can give, and like let them know that it's their job to like take advantage of it and be the best athlete that they can. But sometimes it's just hard to find an athlete that's willing to sacrifice all this stuff just to be this great athlete, because not a lot of people want to do that. So like I see a lot of athletes out there doing exactly not athletes, coaches doing what exactly they need to do, just making sure their athletes are well informed and well provided.
So you had three meets last week. You went to Oregon, you went to Arkansas, you competed in the KT Woodman here. What did you learn about that kind of testing week? There's fatigue, there's great competition, there's travel. What did you learn that might help you down the road?
A lot. This week's kind of been an experiment. So on Monday this week, I did a little like testing with my technique, and I tried all these cues, and my form is not good at all. But it's all about the feeling of each throw and seeing what these cues give me, and see maybe I'm focusing too much or maybe I'm focusing too little on a certain aspect. And I reviewed that film on Monday, and on Tuesday I messaged a bunch of guys on Instagram, like the professional guys who throw far, and some of them told me to give them a call, so I got their numbers and we FaceTimed and talked about just talk shop basically. And I changed things up on Tuesday, and like this is just this Tuesday, and you know, I'm trying other techniques, and I'm trying different things that these guys are saying, and it's starting to click a little more. And yesterday on Wednesday, I had a really great practice. I actually had practice PRs all over the place. Like I was throwing out at the 68 meter line, really easy throws, nice practices, which to me that converts to like 72 meters, 73 meters in competition, because I never go as hard in practice than competition. But kind of learning from Oregon and learning from Arkansas is that these are just season openers in my mind. I'm moving really fast in that competition, but it's not, I'm not at my peak yet, and I understand that, so I want to maximize my peak as much as possible. Just looking back on those throws and the competition, like it's great competition. Oregon was great competition because we had a bunch of, I think it was like 5 or 6 70 plus hammer throwers, and it was just nice to throw against that, because it makes you feel like, you know, you're not always winning meets. I'm not always trying to win meets. I want to see if people will come that will give me the good competition. That's why I went to Arkansas, because I knew a lot of guys were going to throw above 65 meters or even 70 meters, or have thrown that before. So these last couple weeks have been, you know, class to me. It's class is in session, and, you know, the test isn't until conference, nationals, USA's.
So the championship meets, starting with the American Athletic Conference Championship, we're about a month away. What's the plan over the next month to peak at the right time?
So I've talked to Dorf about this, and we're not actually going to try to peak at conference. I'm planning on just training right through it and then going to West Preliminaries and NCAAs, because looking at conference now, I could go out there and, you know, go out and have a practice throw, win the meet. So I'm not too worried about conference. I'm more worried about the national meet. So we're going to try to peak at nationals, because prelims is at Arkansas. That's also why I went to Arkansas, because I wanted that experience in that ring. And I feel very comfortable in the ring, so I feel very comfortable qualifying for nationals and at Arkansas, because, I mean, it's top 12, and I believe I have a really good chance of getting, like, top 3 at prelims. But nationals is really, that's where I want to hit my peak, because I believe I have a chance to win it. I believe I have a big chance to win it, especially how last year nationals went. A lot of these guys got their PRs early on, and they're kind of missing their peak. And I've noticed I kind of hit my peak right when I want to, because I really think it through. So if I plan my peak at nationals, the idea is to peak at nationals and kind of be one of the few guys that actually do peak. And you know, some guys are gonna choke at nationals, and they might not throw as far. And my idea is just hit it at nationals, and then in 2 weeks go to USA's and just have fun.
So if you're at 70.33 meters now after Fayetteville, where do you want to be to give yourself a chance to win at the NCAA meet?
Well, my goal is to get somewhere around 72.5 meters to 74 meters. That's the all-around goal. A nice little conversion from weight throw to hammer throw, so indoor to outdoor, is usually what you throw in feet for the weight throw is what you should throw in meters for the hammer. So I started off the season throwing 69 feet in the weight, and I finished off throwing 74.5 feet in the weight. And so kind of converting it. Usually I'm a much better hammer thrower than I am a weight thrower, so I always throw further in outdoor for that conversion than I do in indoor. So I've set my goal to be kind of 73, 74 meters for the hammer, just because I ended up throwing 74 feet in the weight. That's the big goal.
Michael, what's your major, and have you started thinking about career plans?
Yeah, I'm working on my master's for exercise science right now. I got my bachelor's in exercise science as well. That kind of gives me a wide range of professions to go into. I could go into strength and conditioning, coaching. I could, you know, work for one of those big companies to help design, let's say, like shoes. I could get into prosthetics if I like, take extra classes. I could be an exercise scientist by itself. I could just get into a lot of these fields. I could be a personal trainer. That's why I chose exercise science, because I have more freedom than, let's say, if I became, you know, if I went for nursing, something very specialized.
All right, we've talked a lot of heavy hammer stuff. Let's wrap it up with some music. You're a fan of blues, fan of R&B music. Sam Cooke is one of your favorites. Tell us about Sam Cooke and why his music grabs you.
Well, I like his voice. It's a really relaxing voice to listen to. Just that type of music in general. It's something I'll go out and I'll put my headphones in while I'm throwing, and it'll actually relax my whole body, and I'll get into this groove, and I'll just feel really nice while I'm throwing. And even when I'm relaxing, it helps me relax. Or even when I'm working, I'll throw in a headphone, and I'll just get into this zone or this state of flow that I won't be able to get by listening to, let's say, like heavy metal or like rap or something.
When I asked John Hetzendorf about this, I said I would stereotypically think, and I think sometimes when you walk by the throwing area, there is more aggressive heavy metal music, kind of like a closer in baseball. They come out of the pen and they want to have, you know, the heavy metal music going, but you kind of go the other way. Is there a stereotypical music that throwers listen to?
Oh, yeah, like alternative rock, that kind of the whole, like, My Chemical Romance type of vibe that's going on with throwers. It's the punk rock that's pretty stereotypical. I've heard it played so much in the weight room, or even when the other guys bring out their speakers, they play that kind of music. And when I'm by myself and I'm not filming, I'll bring my speaker or my headphones, and I'll either throw on some alternative, like indie music, or I'll listen to like the blues music. And I don't care who's listening, but I like that music.
Give us two Sam Cooke songs that somebody should listen to if they're not familiar with his music.
Not familiar. Let's see. Oh, I'll have to look this one.
Well, while you're thinking, Sam Cooke was kind of a 60s figure, interesting death in a hotel. He ran an interesting company, too. I think he's well known for palling around with Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali. Was really kind of an important figure during that time in our nation's history.
Yeah, that's crazy. Two songs. Wow. It's difficult because there's so many songs by Sam Cooke that I really like. I'd say one of my favorites is Ease My Trouble in Mind by Sam Cooke. That's a good one. That's a very soothing one. That's one that kind of takes me out of my own head, or my own, puts me in the zone. Oh, man. Another one I would say is Bring It On Home to Me by Sam Cooke. That's also a good one. That kind of goes in line with the other one.
That would be one that he's probably pretty well known for. Interesting guy. All right, Michael, thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening. And they let him pass.
pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.